Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Well, the Republicans have figured out their strategy on the Trump conviction, and the answer is that it was all rigged, just like the election. I mean, I wonder if the deep state is this powerful, why are they even bothering to put up a candidate? Like, why is Donald Trump?
Did you see what else the deep state was behind? Sarah's billboard.
Sir, Tim Pool, this was really funny. Tim Pool yesterday was like, there's no way you can get billboards up this fast. She must have had inside knowledge. It was like, there are all these commenters being like, the Longwell team and Judge Marchant are coordinating. I was given early notice of the
conviction.
They had
the strings up. It was Judge Marchant's daughter. One
early
time,
notice.
Was at a
Weren't
lesbian
you in the
party
jury
with Sarah?
Giving the 12 Americans their marching orders, Sarah?
Dude, my team was so pumped about this because him being like, it's impossible to get billboards up this fast. They were all like, look at us. Look how fast we get billboards up. Also, like,
give us a raise.
I just want to be like, how do you think that they do championship t-shirts at the end of like a World Series or like a Super Bowl? They make them for both, right? We had a campaign ready to go in the event of conviction. If he wasn't convicted, we wouldn't have run it. So, like,
it also was digital. They're in the tubes. Mallory McMorrow of Michigan, the Democratic state senator, she was like, "I drove past one today. It was digital."
Yeah.
Like, what's digital. Your problem, bro?
They don't understand how easy it is
it's
to
not
upload.
Like they're painting.
Yeah, it's not they're not
it's
painting.
Not like they climbed up the ladder to the top
He's
of the building.
Up there.
Hung the canvas. No, they flipped a switch. We sent them a JPEG. You know, like file. And they hit the switch. But Tim Pool. Thanks, Tim Pool. But it was funny. His thing went so viral, accusing it of being a conspiracy. And this is the deal, right? You see conspiracies everywhere, in the billboards, in the courts, and whatever. But here's what there's something right now listening to Republicans, the way that they're circling the wagons to talk about two-tier justice system, the fact that this was rigged, while in concert, they're also all answering, like, there's just, right now, a lot of reporters, and this has been going on for a while, they are asking, I guess, what are all the potential VP contenders, right? Burgum and Rubio and Tim Scott. It's like, will you accept the results of the 2024 election? And they're all like, well, if it's free and fair, if it's a real election, and also Donald Trump's going to win. So it's only a free and fair election if Donald Trump wins. It's not a free and fair election if Joe Biden wins. And there is this thing that they do, and JVL, you were just kind of getting at it. Will Salatan has a great piece and that I think really ties something together that I think when taken singularly is not as clear as when you take it as a group, which is that the Republicans now have turned against any institution that seeks to hold Donald Trump accountable for anything. So if you're the press, you're fake news. If you're trying to hold Trump accountable, if you're the FBI or the civil service, right, you're the deep state. You know, you can't hold him accountable. If it's an election that doesn't elect Donald Trump, it is rigged. If it's, you know, the January 6th committee, you're a House committee, you're rhinos and Democrats. If it's an independent counsel, you're corrupt. If you're the law enforcement that is prosecuting the January 6th insurrectionists, like, you're not real cops then, you know, you're just the corrupt deep state. And now the courts, right? The courts are rigged too. A jury of Trump's peers in New York, it's got to be rigged. And that is, and then on top of that, right, when they ostracize every member of the Republican Party who speaks out, right, this is how they both, A, undermine all the institutions that make up a liberal democracy. People talk about the threat to democracy. It is this. Like, when I listen to voters in the focus groups talk about how they don't know what to believe, and this is part of the fight that JVL and I have all the time, or like, not the fight, but like part of this conversation is these people are pouring poison into these voters' ears all the time. They are locked up in their own echo chamber. So all of their voters believe it. This is all they hear from the right wing. This is the Republican triangle of doom from their elected officials and the Republican infotainment media, is that all this stuff is rigged. All this stuff is deep state and they all believe it. And they have no faith in institutions. And when you have no faith in institutions, you don't have a democracy because democracy, liberal democracy, is just a collection of institutions. I'm going to take a breath.
I mean,
now.
These people aren't children.
That was good.
Right. I mean, they don't have to believe everything that everyone says to them.
Which people?
He's talking about the voters.
The voters, right?
Well, who sure are trapped in the Republican triangle. And some of them don't.
Of doom.
Some of them do. The problem is that some do. Right? Like, the problem is, sure, we can wag our finger at them and say, oh, well, you should be smarter than this. But again, like, there are people have obligations. Like, leaders have obligations. Media has obligations to say the truth. It, like, it shouldn't be shocking that some group of people will respond to being lied to by believing the lies. I mean, there's a lot of evidence of that throughout history.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim. It's good to have you here, Tim. Good to have you here.
Good to be great. Here.
JVL only wants to blame the voters.
It's good to be here. One of my favorite ones. One of my favorite ones was Dan Bishop. Did you see Dan Bishop?
Oh, is he the one who wants to arrest as many Democrats as possible? No, that's the Italian American fellow from Florida.
I saw Dan Crenshaw, a different Dan, talking about how we have to reelect Trump.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what did Bishop say?
Here's Dan Bishop. Dan Bishop is a Republican Tea Partier from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So get the
believes in small
ready.
Government and the Constitution.
Get the accent ready. Believes in small government. And he says this. He's now running for Attorney General in North Carolina. He says, the Trump conviction is as bad as it was in Alabama in 1950 if a person happened to be black in order to get justice. Now, I love this. It's so good on multiple levels because everybody knows which side Dan Bishop would have been on this in 1950. Okay. Everybody knows. All right. Dan Bishop was not going to be the one honest man in North Carolina that was like, we really are concerned about black folks. But he gets to steal the valor of the people that fought for civil rights in the 60s and 70s and impute it onto Donald Trump, who has been indicted in four different jurisdictions, and you know, and many others if you can count past business crimes, and like, so what do you do? Like, what do you say to that? I mean, what do you say? I like, it's just obvious bullshit. Like, it's just total not. It's like letting these people, you know, carry the mantle of victimization and pretend like they're not just victims. They're not just aggrieved. People aren't just coming from them. MAGA Americans are indistinguishable from black people in the South that had to use different water fountains in the 1950s. Like their trauma, the way that the state is coming for them is the same. Like, this is laughable, absurd, and yet it's like, well, you know, there's not a single, it's not like Dan Crenshaw. You'd imagine if there was some good Republicans, you'd imagine your Dan Crenshaws would be like, All right, let's just dial it back a little bit here, okay? Like, the system's working. Like, I didn't really like the brag one, but, you know, we've got some other. Like, you could imagine a conservative pushback on this, but that's not, nobody's giving that, except for, like, a couple of niche bloggers. Like, there's nobody else that is even making that point. There's nobody in the Republican leadership that's, like, trying to dial it back. And even fucking Susan Collins is out there talking about how the brag thing was politicized.
I have a question. The consensus in the Republican world seems to be that this verdict will be reversed on appeal.
Sure.
Why? If everything is rigged by the deep state, why would an appellate court reverse this verdict? Why would they have any faith whatsoever? Why would they not assume that this judge is going to throw the book at Trump and impose the stiffest possible sentence and get him into jail? I mean, like,
there doesn't have to be any logic to any of this.
No, there isn't any,
because
it's just propaganda. Because it's just propaganda from an authoritarian movement.
Yes. Then why is Hunter Biden on trial right now for a gun crime? Why is Hunter Biden being indicted again for a tax crime in a different case with a different judge and a different prosecutor? Like, Joe Biden can't control any of these people? I liked Steve Cohen. Yesterday, did you see Steve Cohen in the congressional testimony? They dragged Merrick Garland up there to like shout at Merrick Garland and say, oh, you've politicized this. Even though the reality is that Merrick Garland was like too slow and institutionalist to actually get anything done. He's like the old Republican criticism of Democrats would have been apt here. The bureaucracy is sclerotic and ineffective. like a traditional Republican criticism would have worked here, but instead they went with the conspiratorial one of like Merrick Garland is like, you know, is a puppet master. Anyway, Matt Gaetz was leading the attack on him, and Steve Cohen of Tennessee goes, Mr. Gaetz is living testament to the fact that Merrick Garland has not weaponized the Justice Department. But Gaetz had left the room by then. But it's like, you know, this is the thing, right? Like, the reality doesn't have to, because they'll just come up, you know, there'll be a new set of smoke and mirrors the next day.
All right. Well, let's move on to other fun stuff.
you feel like we've resolved that issue?
I mean, as much as we're going to get.
Well, can I just, I'm going to say
sure.
One more thing.
Go ahead.
Watching
That's good,
because
I can move the ad read up.
Okay, great. Watching Republicans and the way that they do their communications. This is, sometimes I talk about this in the abstract about the Republicans' ability to create their own echo chamber and set narratives. But I just want people to observe what they're doing right now and how good they are at it. Okay? Because they are good at it. Because they're shameless, and because they don't care that they are undermining democracy. Every single one of them in lockstep right now on their talking points, right? And they are, and so when you think about how voters, everybody, the political question around the conviction is, will it matter to voters? And my answer to that is, it will matter as much as we make it matter. And Republicans right now, with their just histrionics over this, this is banana republic stuff, right? When of course in banana republics, what happens is that the leaders don't get prosecuted for their crimes. But like their histrionics and their ability to all push back in one direction at the same time, this is how they message. And it's why it is so effective. And I think that Democrats, one of the reasons we did the billboards with Ford or Trump voters talking about, like, I'm not going to vote for a convicted felon, is that I think that Democrats often just sit there and say, like, we'll just say, like, we'll let the conviction stand for itself. People will know this. And I'm like, no. People will care as much as you make them care. And you have got to go on offense on this. Like, and there was a lot of people being like, well, doesn't it look like we're politicizing things if we, you know, I didn't even hear David Axelrod say this, but I've heard several people say it, and God love them, but I sort of want to strangle people. Like, think about if the role was reversed. Joe Biden or Hunter Biden. If Hunter Biden gets convicted by Joe Biden's DOJ. Do you think that Republicans just say, well, we wouldn't want to politicize this, so we won't go on the attack?
But maybe voters will hold them to different standards, right? I mean, maybe voters would not punish Republicans for attacking Hunter Biden because they'd expect them to, and they will punish Joe Biden. I don't know the answer to
that.
No,
you know what? It's
different types of voters.
We are talking about different types of voters, but this is not one of those cases. Like, recognize that you are standing, you have the moral high ground. A jury of Trump's peers just convicted him. Let the Republicans try to say that it's going to hypothetically be reversed. Fine. You have a conviction. You don't have to argue on that terrain. You have a conviction. Trump is a convicted felon. No one should let him forget it. This is where surrogates really matter. Go out. Offense. Hit him. Come on.
I don't know. Our friend Nick Cattagio has a piece out arguing the opposite side of where, like, you and Bill are on this, saying that be better for Biden to soft pedal it, and this feeds into the politicization narrative.
Biden doesn't need to do it. This is why I just said surrogates. Like,
I think Biden needs to do it.
I think he should. What he's been doing to me has been totally fine. I have no problem with what he's been doing, where he sort of says, this is crazy, you know. That's fine.
So I say this thing on the Hunter thing. I know this is too much to ask, and I know that Joe Biden is, whatever, a real person with feelings, unlike a shameless narcissistic sociopath like Donald Trump. But like, the right thing to do is for angry Joe Biden to come out in front of a press conference and get asked about the Hunter situation, and to throw his fucking paper on the ground and to be like, you think this system is justice is politicized? Then why is my only fucking surviving son sitting in a courtroom right now? You don't think if I had control over the court system that I would stop that? Because if I was a fucking dictator, if I was an authoritarian, I would stop that right now. That would go viral, and that would sink in. That's not going to happen, though. Well, Joe Biden's kind of doing what Nick Cattagio wants. Here's the problem with the Joe Biden strategy of, like, being rising above it all, is it's like he gets no credit from the people that should give him credit for it, and it doesn't sink in with people that need to be hit over the head. But, like, that's my problem with the soft pedaling.
Yeah, but also here's the thing. I am an institutionalist here. I will argue for Joe Biden to not, you know, go crazy on things that he shouldn't as the American president. He is being an institutionalist by recognizing that Donald Trump has been convicted in America's great system of the court of law. America's a great country where Donald Trump got a free and fair trial.
America's a mid-country at this point, let's be honest.
Good to great. Strong to quite strong.
I think that Joe Biden, though, I agree with Tim, where, like, I just see the missed opportunities everywhere of this. And Joe Biden doesn't have to throw his papers on the ground, but he can hold a press conference and say, I want to call the American people's attention to the fact that my son is on trial by the Department of Justice. I will not interfere in that. I am not interfering in that. Okay, and I will accept the judgment, just as I accept the judgment of a jury of Donald Trump's peers who have said that he is a convicted felon. Like, these opportunities are all around us.
Before we move on, I just say one thing. I am slightly concerned that we're going to get to the point of November 7th or whatever, and the results are finally counted, and Biden will have lost, and that we will then settle on, well, the reason he's lost is because he either did or didn't do X.
No.
And I just don't know that that is going to be the case. Like,
it's not.
I just, like, people think what they think, and, like, that doesn't mean we shouldn't try, because you can move, like, you know, 10,000 voters here, 10,000 voters there. And maybe that winds up being the tipping point that, you know, turns the election. But in general, like, we're all grasping at straws here because this shouldn't be close, right? Like, we're grasping at, like, well, you know, he has to message this way, or he can't message that way because that'll feed into the when. And we're all agitated about it because he should be leading by 7. Unemployment is incredibly low. The economy is very strong. Real wage growth outpaces inflation. Like, everything is. And the guy he's running against attempted an insurrection and has now been convicted of 34 felonies. There is no universe in which this should be close, but it is close because the American people want it to be close. And that is what has made us jump to, well, if Biden pushes this button, then it'll work. And he could play perfect baseball and it may not work.
Well, okay. Well, first of all, I would love to see perfect baseball. I would love to see perfect baseball. I'd love to see what that looks like. Yeah. Number one. Number two, look, the reason that he will have lost if he loses is because he shouldn't have run again. Like, he just shouldn't have. And that was, like, and now we're here. But, like, what are we supposed to do other than try to, like, I don't think he should have run again. But they made the decision to do it. And I accepted that when it happened, because there's nothing to do then at that point but try to create an environment that is the most hospitable for him to win. And that means, again, we are not trying to build a pro-Joe Biden coalition, because there isn't one. But there is. The biggest coalition in American politics is an anti-Trump coalition. And so this, with things like the conviction and trying to make things stick, like Joe Biden right now, because he is perceived as being old and weak, he needs to throw. I disagreed with the papers on the ground as an aesthetic matter, but, like, I temperamentally or energetically, I agree with it in terms of displaying an offense. People want a happy warrior. They want a fighter. They want to see somebody who's going to go toe-to-toe with Donald Trump, and he's got to get there.
My darkest take, absolute darkest take, is that actually Biden was the strongest candidate. And that if somebody else had run, it would be worse right now.
I know.
This is all the polling backs this up.
I agree with this. I think Biden probably should have run anyway. But Biden would have ended up managing right now the country, and the Republicans would have been able to have both things. They would have been like, the incompetent old man that is running a fascist state targeting his political opponents is going to be replaced by someone even crazier, who is a Hamas sympathizing leftist that will listen more to the Jamal Bowman wing of the party. That's probably where we would have ended up. So they would have gotten the worst of
both
worlds.
Well, if you think that, then that, I don't.
I feel like we need to have the Doors in the background.
We don't know.
Right? This is the end, my friend.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, Joe Biden announced that he's gonna shut down the border, gonna issue an executive order to close down the border after asylum requests. But I think it's 2,500 a day once they go over that, and this will finally make Republican voters happy that he is taking border security seriously, right? Oh, Sarah, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sarah.
The best time to do this was 3 years ago. I guess the second best time to do this is right now. But I just like, oh, cool. How far are we from this election?
Five months
before the election. Okay. Good.
Why doesn't he get paid for this?
Good.
I don't know if he should get credit for it. It is kind of late. But the border encounters are down. They're down. They were down 22% last month. Now, David Frum offered. I kind of love Unleashed David Frum.
Lately. He's
I don't
great.
Know if you've noticed that, but mm-hmm. He was on the Daily Pod. He offered kind of a couple of, like, I wouldn't say they were conspiracy theories, but a couple of informed opinions that aren't fully basis in fact, including something about Mrs. Alito's drinking problem, but also that the Mexicans and the Biden administration have a deal. Because like the Biden administration is kind of looking the other way at some not so great stuff that's happening down there in Mexico, in order to interfere with some of the, because there's not really another good explanation for why border crossings are down right now, because the Biden policy hadn't changed until this week, and usually they're up in the summertime. Usually there's an uptick, so maybe there's some other factors happening. But border encounters are down. My problem with this is, again, it kind of goes to the Biden tone question, which is like he gets in the sour spot with various things where it's like he does something. It's like probably the right thing to do in the narrowest sense, but he gets no credit from anybody that wanted this. Like there are no border hawks that are like, great job, Joe Biden.
No,
you know, maybe
never.
The Border Patrol Union does. So I guess maybe there's one group. So maybe that helps in Arizona on the margins. And then he gets shit on by progressives, for not having a total open border policy. And then he gets shit on by people on the right that like kind of raises the salience of the issue, because he's like, I'm putting it back in the news, so now Fox News can shit on me. And it's kind of like, okay, I don't know. I'm sort of the view that maybe doing nothing was better.
Sarah, what do you think? Is doing nothing better?
No, I do think he had to do something on immigration. But I do take Tim's point. This is not an easy one, because I will say, when I said the second best time is right now, I actually don't mean that. The second best time is maybe not when you disrupt the narrative around Donald Trump's conviction. I agree with Tim, like you do put it back in the news. I think he should have done this a long time ago, but even if he had done it like 4 months ago, like some time where you could... where it doesn't look like it's just related to the election. It just now, nobody looks at this and think like, Biden taking the border seriously now. Like, why are people going to give him credit for this? Like the border hawks, they're not, because it looks transparently transactional around the election. And so I think that he should have done something earlier.
They didn't give him any credit for the immigration reform bill that he was prepared to sign, right? I mean, he got no credit. If he's not going to get credit for that, that Republicans torpedoed, then of course he's not going to get credit for this.
Yeah. Right? I mean, maybe the right time really was to do it right after they torpedoed it. Said, fine, I'm going to do it by executive order anyway. Right?
Because that's right.
And then try to carry the message through then.
Yes.
Because that I think that was a, that's why I said, I really don't have a strong view on this. Anything might matter in the end. So I don't know that doing nothing versus doing this, I don't know politically what ends up being better. It might not matter. And on the policy of it, I think it's probably marginally better to try to limit somewhat the amount of asylees that are coming over the border. And though I do think, you know, that like he had a potential message to work with here if he had done nothing, right? Which was like, we tried to do something. I tried to do something. He blocked it. I kept trying. You know, I want to do something. I was willing to work with Republicans. I worked with the most conservative Republican from Oklahoma. So, and I think that's going to be the message that he's going to have to push forth anyway. Like, if immigration is brought up in the debate, like, that's going to be his message against Trump, right? It's not going to be this executive order. It's going to be, I tried to do a bipartisan deal. I worked with members of your own party. You scuttled it.
I do think Democrats at some point have to grapple with how vulnerable they are in immigration. It's all over the focus groups. It's all over the center left focus groups, the swing voter focus groups. People care a great deal about this sense that people are pouring over the border and we don't know who's in the country. And the fact is, when Donald Trump talks about rounding up however many millions of people and putting them in camps, like, that is extremely alarming. But and I don't want that. And I want immigrants to come here. I'm like a super pro immigrant over here. Like, it's the best, one of the best things about America. But like, shutting down the border or increasing border security, limiting the number of asylees is an easy way to stop the flow of this while we try to figure out what we're doing about all the people that are here. And like, Democrats can't just ignore this problem. That has been their biggest vulnerability, and they just ignore it. And
I'm fascinated by what Polis says about this. This is like my most thing I'm most excited to hear. Yeah, what does he say? I don't know. That's what I'll ask him about when we're in Denver, because Denver has a problem with this. Like, there are a lot of asylees that are in Denver and they can't work, and there are a lot of various, you know, problems associated with it.
Yeah, like, we haven't solved what to do about all the people that are here. How do you give them temporary visas? How do they work? How do you make it sure that they're not here illegal so they can go back to their home countries? I mean, it is a massive problem that everyone just looks the other way on.
But was also, again, this is, you know, it's been a massive problem since, like, you know, 1900, and it's going to be a massive problem 10 years from now and 20 years from now and 40 years from now, so long as America is the most dynamic economy in the world. People want to come here. We have a long border.
We should want them to come here, and so we should talk about how we reform the system to make it so they can come here legally.
I mean, sure, but we probably won't. Yeah,
Trump will make the country so unappealing in a second term that will solve the influx problem.
I want to ask. I'm not suggesting this. I'm literally asking this. Is it immigration per se that people care about? Because I feel like if they cared about immigration per se, then they would have gotten very upset that the wall never got built. If they cared about immigration per se, they would be incredulous over Trump's proposal to round up 15 million immigrants and deport them. Because, again, this isn't possible. It's not a thing that is possible.
They don't know
you
that.
You cannot do that.
They think the wall wasn't built. First of all, lots of them think the wall was built. Like, that he got really far in it. Second of all, that if they didn't, it's because the Democrats blocked him. Yeah, great, great question.
Right, this is what I'm saying. I think they just like talking about the people they want to hurt. And immigration is just another way of talking about the people you want to hurt. In the way that, you know, like, Texas abortion laws are about, like, hurting the people you want to hurt. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think you are wrong. I think, look, and here's the thing. I think that you are right about some people, right? I think this is a JVL sweeping statement about voters that applies to some people and not many others. And I think if you live in a border state or you live out west and you are grappling with what to do about the fact that there are all of these people now in your cities and towns that are unhoused that are fleeing violence from their home countries and, like, there's no solution. Everybody's just like, well, you guys figure it out. They're at your doorstep. And it is a humanitarian crisis. And, like, it's just, we just treat it as nothing but a political football.
You can tell Sarah's been going to pro-democracy summits with Goody Two-Shoes people because she just used the word unhoused.
Oh, God, I did. I did.
And you can just tell she's been... You guys are rubbing off on us. You're rubbing off on us, libs. That's a good sign. Sarah's using out there using unhoused.
Yeah, it's the lesbians. I'm surrounded by lesbians who say unhoused.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Yesterday we got a Time Magazine long form interview with Joe Biden. The headline on the piece was "Suck It, Sulzberger." It was tremendous. Just as a piece of anti-New York Timesism. I wonder what you guys thought of it. I wrote a little bit about this yesterday. I thought that Biden was basically fine. I mean, you know, he stumbles over his words. It's a pure transcript that they give you with all the ums and ahs. It's not cleaned up or sanitized. But, like, he has a defined view of American politics, a defined view of foreign policy. He seems to grasp everything that is going on and why it is going on. And so he doesn't talk like Pete Buttigieg. And the other thing that Time did is they ran fact checks of both the things that Donald Trump said in his interview, which were not true, and then the things that Biden said in his interview, which were not true. And the Biden fact check is like 760 words, and it's things like Joe Biden said that in 10 years there will be 1 billion people in Africa, and actually there are 1.4 billion people in Africa now, and in 50 years... the United Nations projects that they will go to 2.4 billion. The Trump fact check runs to 4,200 words and is things like Donald Trump insisted that he had never said that he would terminate the Constitution, but here's where he said he would terminate the Constitution. Donald Trump said that he ordered 10,000 troops to the Capitol on January 6th. He did not do that. This is where those orders came. So, I don't know.
And then there are other things that couldn't be in the Trump fact check, like when he said, I'll tell you what my plan is on birth control in a few weeks.
Yeah, which he didn't. So, I don't know. I came out of that feeling like, once again, Biden sort of overperforms and it doesn't matter. And no, nothing. Like, one of these days he will underperform and everybody will set their hair on fire. Sarah, you look very skeptical of me.
Well, when you say overperforms, I mean, here's the thing. And this is where this, I don't know, I could boil this entire election choice down to these two Time Magazine interviews. He didn't say that he was going to seek retribution on all of his enemies and replace the entire civil service with loyalists. And what else did Trump say in his? I mean, Trump's
he's
thing.
He's like, I think people like that.
Yeah, right. Like they want a dictator, they want an authoritarian. So, you know, Trump's thing was, I remember when it came out, we talked about it on the show, and I was like, well, this is refreshing because Donald Trump is giving us the roadmap of what he's going to do over the next 4 years, and it is batshit crazy, completely insane. We should be focused on this. Should be focused on what this man is saying he will do, not what we perceive him to be doing, not our conjecture, what he says he's going to do.
Military going after migrants was another thing
he said. That was the rounding up millions of people using the military. And so, like, if you just focus on that, like, person massively unfit to be the next president. And then you look at Joe Biden's and you're like, I don't think he's overperforming. I think he is, you know, he did okay. And we're all glad he did okay. Because we're really rooting for him. Because the other guy's really, really scary. And, like, ideally, you know, we would have someone who was just without question, just dominating the space and going, whatever. He did fine. It's good. Good, good, good. Please.
He did challenge the reporter to fisticuffs.
He did, which I thought, you know, I got to say, I think is insane. I don't know why he's doing this. And yet, part of the other, there's the other part of me that's like, well, we want to fight her. I don't know.
I kind of want to hear it. I want to hear the tone. I was like, that was the one part of the speech or the transcript.
I could take you,
like,
Jack.
Yeah. I was like, the transcript is not giving me what I need here. I was like, was it, were they both laughing? What did Biden like stand up from the table and point at him? I'm like, I need a little more context around I could take you. I could take you can go a bunch of different ways.
In my mind's eye, he's like the elder Mandelbaum from the Seinfeld episode with the Mandelbaum brothers.
Yeah.
He was like challenging Jerry to a weightlifting contest. And,
so that was not great. I mean, he's meandering in the interview, no doubt. And as it's not sharp, I wouldn't use the word sharp, but
Trump
it's also
meandering
it's between
in his
the 40s.
The other thing. Yeah. Like, Trump is. Like
all of his takes are kind of like, we should support our allies. Like, American democracy is important, and I've worked hard. Don't forget Asia. I care. I reorganized the Quad of our relationship with India and Australia and got them all back together. It's like, does Donald Trump know what the Quad is? Like, no, almost certainly not, right? And you know, then you get to domestic policy, and he's like, I'm working to try to get this stuff better. Like, there's not the thing that's missing for me really on the interview is I didn't finish it and think, man, that guy gave us like a clear indication of what he wanted to do in the next term. That's the other contrast we have here, right? Which is we have Trump answering very specifically all the insane Mussolini-esque plans he has for term two, and Biden kind of just being like, steady as she goes. And I don't know, steady as she goes is fine for me because things are steady in my life. But I think he's got to give something to some other people to grab onto. Or maybe not. Like, maybe the answer is, you know, JV, we were messaging about this. I noticed in his speeches now he keeps doing the thing about how Donald Trump, something broke in Donald Trump in 2020.
Yeah, he's changed.
Right. Maybe the message is essentially just like, you can't trust this guy. He broke, you know, like his brain's broken. Like, something snapped. He's insane. Stick with me. And maybe that's going to be enough. But yeah, that's kind of what you got in the Time interview was just a little rambly, steady as she goes, same politics that everybody in the Uniparty has supported for 50 years. That's fine with me. I like the Uniparty. Made some mistakes, has some demerits, but, you know, as directionally, things have been going pretty good. I think that's kind of what, that's maybe not the choice we want. It's a choice I want, but maybe that's not a choice that's great. Like I want to steady as she goes versus like insane change.
Maybe this is like that Colin Coward thing that you did a YouTube short on.
Yeah.
You know, like you go to the airport, and the airports are absolutely like filled with people because everybody's traveling and going places, and Disney World's and these same people who are taking their vacations and driving around their new Ford Raptors are like, yeah, we got to burn this whole system down, bro. It's bad. You know, it's like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. Okay. Polls. We got some polls. We got some posting. What? Well, I'm sorry. Did you have something else?
It's just, you know, it hasn't been the most uplifting episode. Sebastian's in the comments saying that he's getting really depressed.
I know. We've depressed our producer. So God knows what we're doing.
Has this been that bad? I mean, this is just the state of affairs here. I mean, you know, the polls are kind of moving. I guess let's hear what you have to say about the polls. Maybe we could put a positive spin on the polls.
We saw like a point or 2 point swing post conviction to Biden in a couple polls.
This is when we need like a sound effect, Sebastian. That's not for you to work on to get people uplifted. It's like a point to Biden. It's like, woo, you know.
You know, we had a point to Biden previously following the State of the Union where, again, he overperformed expectations. Like,
expectations are corpse. So, yeah.
So what do you guys think? Was it what you expected it would be, what you hoped it would be? Do you think there's more out there? Or do you think like this race is just basically, of course it should be a stable race because you have two presidents running against one another, right? Everybody knows everything there is to know about them. You would expect the swings that we're going to get over the next few months to be based on more on voter screens than on people changing their minds.
So I got a strong theory of the case on this, which is you got your double haters. I talk about them all the time, right? People who don't like Biden or Trump. And so a lot of these people are third party curious right now. Talk to a lot of them in the focus groups. They're down on Trump, but they're Republicans. They're MAGA-y, but they want someone who's not a politician. They do kind of want to break the system. And so they're super RFK curious. But eventually people will get uncurious about RFK. Like, I think they'll see enough of him. And a lot of voters talk about this in the focus groups where they're like, well, I might vote for RFK, but if I thought it was going to reelect one or the other, they wouldn't. And so over time, as this becomes a binary choice, I think you get late breaking decisions. Okay. I think the polls are going to be static for a while. And then we're going to hit the phase where people are starting to choose. And right now they're sort of just still in there like, do I have to choose? And what you need are for the double haters to break against Trump. And at some point, like, there will be a break in this. And I believe that there will be. Like, I believe the double haters will ultimately break against Trump.
Which way do you think
the double haters data? Because we have some double haters data. Have you seen the double haters data from ABC?
No, let me see.
This is what I was going to pull up. So I was typing. I was listening to you. Sometimes people get mad at me on the YouTube. They see I'm looking down. I'm like, I'm listening. I was just pulling up the article, so I have it. Okay. This is the independents. For the double haters, 65% of Americans who view Trump and Biden unfavorably think the verdict was correct. 67% of them said Trump should end his presidential campaign. 51% of them did think it was politically motivated. But even still, 2/3 thinking that he should end his presidential campaign among that specific group. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So in the focus group we did about the we did it with 2-time Trump voters, but who are like kind of out on him. So they're not Democrats. They don't want to vote for Joe Biden, but they don't like Donald Trump. These are like classic double haters that are in our persuasion window. They thought that the election was, or they thought the case was politically motivated, right? So they have that sort of right-leaning, like, yeah, this is bullshit, they're going after Trump. But also they were like, and it was a totally fair trial and they found him guilty because the dude's guilty. This guy sucks. 5 people in that group were going for Biden, okay? 5 people of the 9 were going to go for Biden. Only one was definitely going to go for Trump. The other ones were like third party, leave it blank types. I think that this is the most optimistic I can be. And it's going to take work. The thing I want to say is, like, I don't just think this happens. I think that this is about, you sort of have to make Biden irrelevant. Like, Biden can be a tomato can, right? Like, it is about how unfit Donald Trump is, which is why the offense matters. It's why we're running the billboards. It's why the conviction matters. Everything has to be, you got to turn this thing into a referendum on Trump and Trump's level of fitness. And that's going to require the work. But I do think that that's when the dynamic breaks at the end and people are like, yeah, I just can't put this guy back in the White House. And like, hopefully Joe Biden lives for 4 years. Like, that's fingers crossed. And like, we have a different election then. That's where I think it goes. I'm going to stand on that. You guys can mark this tape because there's going to be days when I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated today. I feel like the campaign talks a lot about democracy, but it is not campaigning. Like, democracy is at stake. And I'd like to see that. I'd like to see a million surrogates out there, whatever. But I do think that by the time this whole thing is run through, that the judgment of the American people will be that they can't return Donald Trump to the White House.
Yeah, I mean, a small movement in Biden's direction is good. You know, I like, this is a frustrating thing that is going to happen all year, right? When it's like, when you're getting to like, are we depressed when we're talking about this? It goes back to your point earlier, JVL. It's like, everybody feels like it shouldn't be close. Everybody feels like this should be a 7-point race. Like, we're all just like very frustrated. And it sucks. Like, yeah, it sucks that we have to like kind of squint and look at, say, oh, is 2 points moving one direction? Is that good or bad? But it is good. They're going to have to grind it out. The state polls have looked a little better. I do think it takes a week or two for the stuff, 2 weeks really, for stuff to sink in the polls. So I don't think that like we're really going to, you know if it's leveled out here, if there's any more slack in the numbers for another week or so. I think it is objectively true that like the whole BS spin in the first 36 hours from Republicans, like for some reason, some pundits bought into, it's like, I got kind of hot about this on an MSNBC segment, which is like, like, yeah, it does seem like it's helping Trump. You know, it's raising the motivation. Like, all of that was such bullshit. Like, it was such, it did help him raise some money, and he has a big money gap. So there's that. Like, you know, besides that.
You know what helped him? It helped a lot of anti-Trumpers on Twitter. Because they have been wrestling with how they were going to get to voting for Trump publicly. Yeah. And this conviction allowed them to be like, oh, well, now I have to. I mean, I don't like Trump, but the weaponization of the law, I would crawl over broken glass to vote for him now.
Oh, that's a, can we just, like, hold on. I know the show's about, I know it's been a long show, but we have to address this. Sometimes you get frustrated. You're like, I need to address your stupid points. I refuse to, because sometimes they seep in, and people that aren't paying attention that much kind of listen to this, and they're like, yeah, it is kind of unfair the way Donald Trump was treated. And, like, that is a good point. It's like, that's not a fucking good point, okay? Like, Donald Trump literally asked Bill Barr to arrest his enemies. Like, Donald Trump did the thing that these guys are saying that they're supporting Trump for, because they're mad that they imagine that the other side did it. It's like, it is nonsenseville. Like, Donald Trump literally has said he wants to weaponize the government. He tried to weaponize the government last time. He just was too incompetent to do it in most cases. And so, like, Donald Trump is the one that wants to abuse the justice system. So, like, saying that you're going to support Donald Trump because you're upset with how the justice system is working is like, totally, totally nonsensical.
Also, let me just tell you something. The justice system was working. Right? If it had moved at all, yeah. I mean, whatever.
Then all of them would have been happy.
Well, no.
We'd have been able to support DeSantis.
We'd try these other court cases. Yeah. We'd try these other court. The way that the anti-antis argue is contextless. Yeah. It's always contextless. It's the idea of, like, well, no, this is such a railroading of Trump. I'm like, dude, cheated on his pregnant wife, right? Who just had a baby with a porn star, which, by the way, this isn't like he, like, fell in love with Stormy Daniels and, like, they had an affair. Like, he had an affair with all the millions of times and, like, was cheating on her left and right and while she had a baby at home. And then he covered it up. And then he covered up the cover up. Other people went to jail for it. And so, like, look, I don't know the law well enough to know the exact nuances of, like, should it have been a felony or, like, a misdemeanor or whatever, but, like, dude is guilty of these things. You know he did these things. And also, he's been indicted in all the other places for the tape that you heard him say, go find the 11,000 votes. You saw the insurrection on January 6th. Anybody who comes up with the idea that, like, no, after this, I have to crawl over broken glass to vote for the guy who's got all these convictions is insane. Like, and just recognize how deeply tribal you are that this allows you to try to get on side with your team. That you're like, please... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
They gave Donald Trump a felony when he deserved a misdemeanor. Yeah. So now I have no choice but to put on a MAGA hat. What?
It's preposterous.
Fuck you.
You know who else was given a felony when he deserved a misdemeanor?
Hunter Jesus. Biden? Jesus.
Jesus. Jesus. Yeah.
All right. So listen, it's late, but I got to ask this because it'll give me joy. Joe Manchin, who has been...
Every topic that JVL brought up, Sarah's face. Can we do a super cut of just Sarah's face every time JVL brings up a new topic?
Just, I know too much about where he's going and what he's thinking. And, like, why, I know why he takes joy from this. Ugh.
Joe Manchin, who was the quarterback for the president's legislative agenda, who basically wrote every bill for the Democrats that got turned into law, who has been warmly thanked for his service by the president of these United States. He has left the Democratic Party. He just can't do it anymore. He can't be part of this party. Meanwhile, Larry Hogan, who has had the campaign chair of the president of the United States and leader of his party, say that his campaign is now over. He's dead to me. Has had Larry Trump, the head of the RNC, disavow him as, you know, being just another one of these little whiners, little whiny bitches that they don't want any part of.
Do you know what he said?
Larry Hogan is still a Republican.
To get that? Do you know what he said to get that? He just said, I think we should respect the verdict of the jury.
Yeah. So here's my question. Why is it that Joe Manchin can leave the Democratic Party, but Larry Hogan can't leave the Republican Party?
Joe Manchin can out of political viability. Larry Hogan, I don't know. I don't have a good answer.
Wouldn't he be politically viable as a Democrat in Maryland running for Senate if he had chosen to do that?
I think so, but nobody's tried it. I think he would have been, but nobody has tried it.
He would have absolutely been politically viable as a Democrat. If he'd run as a Democrat, he would have won, no problem.
So, like, what is this? It's this asymmetry, right? This weird, you know, somebody emailed me and they're like, JVL, I think that everything you tear your hair out about boils down to one question. Why does Trump have such a hold over Republicans, but Biden doesn't have any sort of hold over Democrats? And that's what this is really about, right? It's about the residual self-image of Democrats feel like, yeah, I guess I'm kind of like a Democrat, but I don't really like Biden, and I could leave the Democratic Party, and, you know, not all Democrats, but enough, you know, 10% of them, 15% of them. But on the Republican side, man, it's like they got prison ink, and now they're, you know, their face has a tattoo of which gang they're on, and so they can't leave the gang ever. Because, like, you know, it's the sign is right there. And if they do, then, you know, who knows?
Can I answer this question? I'll answer it honestly. Everything basically when I think about this particular dynamic comes down to that old Simpsons like meme, or that it's a Simpsons thing where it was like the two conventions and the Republicans are like, we hate Democrats, and Democrats are like, we hate ourselves. And the reason that like Republicans are unified in their hatred of Democrats. Democrats are this unruly coalition of lots of different things. So they hate all other people in their coalition, or they don't have the same priorities. And they get embarrassed, right, by their far left fringes, right? So Joe Manchin is saying, I can't take these college campus protests and whatever. And so I'm out on these guys. Whereas Republicans are like, Marjorie Taylor Greene, what a scamp. What a scamp. I may not agree with her, but she's just fine, you know. Their homogeny is like, this is one of those that I think, like, the Republicans' homogeneity is their strength, and diversity is Democrats' weakness. Not like racial diversity, but like diversity of coalition. Like, it's just like it's a lot of different priorities, whereas Republicans have one single priority, and that is stopping Democrats. And they're unified around their hatred of Democrats, and Democrats have all these disagreements within themselves. And that makes it, yeah, easy to bail on.
Republican convention was, we want what's worst for everyone. We're just plain evil. And the Democratic convention was, we hate life and ourselves. We can't cover it. Simpsons are
Thank
good.
You for
I'm going to answer your question with two words, and I'm going to whisper them because I don't want to get in trouble for people saying I'm condescending. Education polarization. Okay. That's what I think explains the difference.
Great show. Long show. Guys, we'll do this again next week. And we'll be in Denver the week after that.
Sold out show, guys.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Boom. So we had to move to a bigger venue because it sold out so fast, the first venue. And now we sold out the 550. A lot of Denver people. I didn't know there were so many of our people in Denver.
And by the way, it's all, did you know this? No one's going to believe this, that this was not intentional. I did intentionally plan this because I thought there was going to be a Denver Nuggets parade during this time. And I wanted to take Toulouse. Mm-hmm. And we missed it last year for a variety of reasons. Nuggets lost. But I did not plan these other things. This life never works out like this for me. It also happens to be Gay Pride weekend, and Widespread Panic happens to be playing at Red Rocks that weekend. And as mentioned earlier, the Dodgers and Rockies are in town. So it's just like we have caught a bounty of riches for people who want to make a fun weekend out of it.
Amazing. Come see us.
Bye.
See you then. Peace.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.